Let's Talk Crypto with Gabrielle Haynes.
Hello, we're on with Jonathan, a member of the Cabin DAO. How are you doing today, Jonathan?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing? Thanks for having me, Gabriel.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining me. So basically, I got introduced to you through Yonatan, who I did some work with in the past. And he said, this guy is doing some cool stuff out in the middle of Texas, 45 minutes from Austin. And I drove out there with my wife to go check out your spot. And I was really impressed with what your guys are up to. So I just wanted to take the time today to discuss what the project is, learn about you, and get some publicity for the Cabin DAO.
Awesome. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
So please tell me a little bit about yourself. Maybe give me a little bit about your background and how you got into crypto.
Sure. So I'm Jonathan Hillis, one of the founders of Cabin DAO, and we are a community of remote cabins for independent online creators, as you said, in the Texas Hill Country, about 45 minutes outside of Austin. We run a residency program that is structured as a DAO, or a decentralized autonomous organization. And we view ourselves as an embassy and home for other DAOs and an experiment in decentralized cities.
Okay. I want to... First, before we dive into exactly what that means, because it's hard to, before I got there, I didn't really understand what the project was, but yeah, we'll dive into it in a second. But how did you, A, get into crypto? What were you doing before this?
Yeah, so I've been following crypto actually since probably 2013. I was a senior in college at the time, and my roommate showed me Silk Road explained Bitcoin to me. And then, you know, shortly after that, I got interested and, you know, bought a little Bitcoin, and have followed, you know, since then from a speculative perspective and from a technology perspective, trying to really understand how this stuff works. And I've, you know, gotten more involved through each of the sort of hype waves and followed the evolution of the space. But it was really only in the last year that it felt to me like crypto had reached this tipping point where you could actually do stuff with it. And I think watching, you know, DeFi summer last summer, and then watching some of the DAO governance structures and tools that emerged and were built on top of that, you know, led me to go much further down the rabbit hole. And ultimately, you know, what fully crypto-pilled me was having the first folks out to the cabins. So I spent the past 6 years at Instacart. I was a director of product, building products for Instacart shoppers, the people who shop and deliver the groceries on the platform. And as I thought more about the gig economy and, you know, building for gig workers, what I realized was that the biggest change I think that's happening in the world right now is declining transaction costs. And the fact that software is reaching the point where anybody now can open up an app or go online and very easily find these atomic units of work to take part in. And there's a great Nobel Prize winning economist, Ronald Coase, who wrote about the nature of the firm and how the only reason companies exist is because transaction costs are high. And so as transaction costs go down, we are going to end up more in this world where people are working independently online. And while one version of that is the gig economy, I was particularly interested in versions of that that had less commoditized labor and more opportunity for people to build individual personal monopolies. And to me, that led me to the creator economy and led me to building these cabins, inviting a bunch of new internet friends and independent online creators out to the cabins. And ultimately, it was the group of us sitting around a campfire one night that led to the formation of Cabin DAO.
I love that story. I love so much to dig into just on those few sentences. First of all, the Silk Road, that was definitely the first time I bought Bitcoin as well. That was like the first, I maybe heard about it before, but that was my first real interaction with it. So I'm with you. You bringing up this idea that as transaction cost goes lower, then you have, there's less reason for businesses to exist. Maybe break that down for me a little bit more. I'm curious what that means.
Yeah, sure. So I think it was in the 70s, Ronald Coase wrote this paper where he basically said, well, if you look at economic theory, companies shouldn't exist. And so why do they exist? I think the paper is called The Nature of the Firm. And the conclusion he came to was that in purely, you know, economic theory terms, you know, you don't have transaction costs. You can just, you know, interact with other people and make deals or make exchanges of goods or services or labor or whatever, you know, without having friction associated with that. Well, we know, of course, in the real world, there is friction and there are costs to doing deals or to having transactions. And that was sort of Ronald Coase's point, and he won a Nobel Prize for it for saying, look, companies exist because they pool together people and then they create an environment where you don't have to renegotiate a contract for every single thing you do. You just say, I'll pay you this much money to kind of do whatever needs to be done. And that structure has worked pretty well for the last century. But what's really magical about this moment of technology that we're in is that software has gotten good enough where we can start to collaborate and interact and describe complex units of work in ways that actually do have very low transaction costs. And the gig economy was the first example of this, but we're now seeing this applied much more broadly in, you know, the creator economy and in crypto, where we see declining transaction costs. And as a result of that, we actually are living in the sort of idealized economic world that Ronald Coase was describing, where individuals can just interact directly with other individuals and they don't need these sort of pooled intermediaries of companies in the same way anymore.
So how does that idea apply to the creator creator cabin, excuse me? What is the old way and what is the new way?
Yeah, so I think we're still exploring this, and this is what's so fun right now is no one knows exactly what it's going to look like. But I think, you know, you can think about it as an evolution from the gig economy to the creator economy to the crypto economy. So, you know, if you think about a traditional work agreement, like if you sign up at a company and, you know, join, you're going to sign all this paperwork and, you know, have all these like literal contracts and literal, you know, friction to getting a job. In the gig economy, you can just open an app and you can see a unit of work and you can see how much it's going to pay. You can accept it or not accept it, and then you can get paid out immediately. And that is the first sort of primitive of what this like low transaction cost environment looks like. The problem is that only works really well in the context of commoditized labor, in the context of work that is very easy to complete because, or easy to describe because it's the same or it's very similar. Or with rideshare, for instance, it's just take someone from point A to point B over and over. And so that can be packaged into a gig economy platform pretty easily. What's much harder is to do that with knowledge work, because knowledge work is inherently hard to describe. And if you can perfectly describe it, you're halfway to implementing it. And so, what I think the creator economy has started to show us is that these declining transaction costs are now moving up chain into more valuable and interesting types of labor, and ideally doing it in non-commoditized fashion where people can build personal monopolies. People can say, look, here's who I am, here's what I can contribute to the world, and they can still have the reduced transaction costs of the internet, but maintain a lot of the personal autonomy of doing their own unique work. And I think crypto is just accelerating this. What crypto is doing is it's now taking that from a single player game to a multiplayer game. It's saying, not only can you be an independent online creator, you can be a part of a decentralized autonomous organization that is a network of independent online creators that can now work together to sort of simulate the same type of scale of coordination of companies, but without the you know, centralized coordination mechanism of a company.
Yeah, fantastic. So I want to take it, out of the theoretical, and to bring it to the actual physical location. I'll tell my story briefly of what I saw. So we drove out about 45 minutes out of Austin, and we're driving up into the hill country. We pass by this gate. All of a sudden on the right, we see this gate, wrought iron gate, Creator Cabins. There's like, this is the place. We pull right in. So you guys got a structure there that you built out of shipping containers. I think it's three shipping containers, four shipping containers, kind of in like an H type of layout. And that's where we met, and we walked inside. You gave us a little tour. Look beautifully renovated, like looks very nice, right in the middle of basically a forest. There's nothing, really nothing around, a couple ranches, maybe a couple miles away, but really pretty empty space. And we walked around, and you kind of showed us like, what really helped me was like, okay, this is where we want to build this, and this is the vision for this. And kind of as we were walking through, like I could kind of see what you're trying to achieve and what is going on over there. So it was very cool, and it got me very excited, which is part of the reason why I wanted to talk to you again. But yeah, so please give me kind of from the beginning, what the idea was with this specific place. Did you find a lot of land? Why here? Just a lot of questions, but take from there.
Yeah, sure. So a couple of years ago in 2019, when I was still at Instacart, I was really burnt out at one point, had been working a ton. And, at one point my boss at the time, a wonderful human who actually just emailed me today, David Hahn, looked at me and said, you know, you just need to like drop everything and go on vacation for a month and go like sit on a beach somewhere and think about what you want to do with your life. Which was like the nicest and most generous thing I think a boss has ever said to me. And I did it the next week. I left and went somewhat stereotypically to Thailand, and went out to a series of pretty remote islands off the southwestern coast of Thailand, got as far away from everything as I could, and found these wonderful little cabins on these islands and just stayed in them for a month thinking about what I wanted to do. And what I realized was that, you know, ever since I was a kid, I had been really interested in architecture. I had grown up in these online communities, and I'd had these wonderful experiences in college of being in an environment where I was living in a residential setting with a bunch of other, you know, like-minded, excited, interesting people. And I wanted to bring some of those threads together. And you know, so it was a while from then until I actually managed to sort of wrap up my time at Instacart and leave, but I knew I wanted to go out and build a cabin in the woods, and I wanted to start bringing interesting people from internet communities out to the cabin, to spend time together. And of course the pandemic happened, and I think that just accelerated my realization that while there's a tremendous amount of community building and coordination that we can do online, as I think we've all seen, there's also a very important factor of reality, of being together in the same place and the sort of liminal time and space that provides to be creative and collaborative in a way that is more challenging when you're just online. And so that led me down the path of thinking about decentralized cities and how we can start to build these environments for the 21st century that respond to the technology of computers and the internet and crypto in the way that, you know, the 20th century responded to automobiles with sort of the modern cities that we live in. And so we built the cabin, we invited some people out. That first group is the group that started the DAO and decided that it, you know, would be a good idea to pool some money together and bring out independent online creators. And, you know, from there, it's really just been a whirlwind of of growth of the community and of this idea of decentralized cities. And the more that I think our community has thought about it, the deeper we've gotten into the idea that having a network of villages around the world where people from the internet can meet online and then come together in person is a pretty exciting future that I think we all want to be a part of.
It's interesting. So this didn't really start as a crypto project. It was kind of just like future cities of the internet, something like that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Part of what I love about our DAO is that you're exactly right. We didn't start as a crypto project, but we found crypto as the perfect technology stack for the use case that we were building. And I like to joke that, you know, now we're LARPing as a city state. We have Cabin tokens, which is our local currency. We just released our first set of NFT passports, and we're working on, new digital passports as well. These passports are NFTs that anyone can buy to come out and spend time out at the cabins that help fund our residency program. And we're starting to think about what, you know, other nodes in the network look like. But these sort of primitives that crypto provides in terms of economics, in terms of access, in terms of ownership, and in terms of governance, ended up being the perfect fit for what we needed for the project.
Well, why? Let's dig into that a little deeper. Why do you need crypto? I mean, you could just very easily ID people at the gate. Okay, we have a list. These people come in, these people don't, whatever. You can also print some currency, I guess. You know, wouldn't be as elegant, obviously. But I mean, what does crypto bring to the table?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I was actually very skeptical about this at first as well. I was asking a lot of those same questions when we were first talking about launching the DAO. We had a community that we were starting, and our community was born out of something called the Creator Co-op. So we actually originally started as a cooperative of independent online creators, and then we sort of converted the cooperative, or it evolved over time into a DAO. And I was very skeptical, as were some other members of the community, about whether crypto technologies were actually going to be useful or necessary for what we were doing. As I said, I'd been interested in crypto from a technology and speculative perspective for 7 or 8 years at that point, but I hadn't really seen tangible use cases for it. And what really changed my mind was understanding how tokens could be used to bootstrap not only an economy, but also a governance system. And I think that's where crypto has really excelled for us. Is we crowdfunded via a token sale that allowed us to, you know, run the residency program. These were people essentially just making a donation to help support online creators. But then in exchange for that donation, we were able to give them actual governance capabilities in selecting what creators came out. And it was done in this amazing decentralized way where I don't even know who many of the, you know, members of the DAO are, but anyone with tokens can go in and vote on who gets to come stay out at the cabins. And so, are many of these things possible, you know, without crypto? Yeah, they're possible. But crypto provides a toolkit that makes it much easier to do this sort of governance in a way that at least made a lot of sense for our community.
I like that. What impressed me the most is that you're doing something that pushes the limits of what, I don't know, crypto is. You don't see many physical crypto projects. A lot of them are online. I mean, for obvious reasons, it's a digitally native idea, but it takes it so much further. And I really like what you're doing. You're actually making a place, making a location, using it for governance, using it for a medium of exchange. It's really cool. So what can you use the token for? You can vote. You can buy things. Do you have what's the exchange rate? I don't know.
Yeah, we like to, not think too much about like token prices or anything like that. Like our goal here is to build a strong community and a strong internal medium of exchange and governance. And so that's the main focus. I mean, if you want to join, you can go on Uniswap and buy some of our tokens and join the community. But the real goal is to use it for governance and to use it for our guild. So I think the part that's been sort of most surprising and emergent about how the DAO has worked is that we really did it originally as this residency program. And it was just, you know, kind of a single use coin that was used to fund the residencies for season one. But it turns out that, you know, we built a community around that and now people want to keep it going. So I mentioned we launched the passports for season two and we're now building out a guild. We have a lot of folks who have actually quit their Web2 jobs to go full-time into Web3 working in and around Cabin DAO. I think there are six of us so far that have done it and hopefully many more to come in the future. And that guild works in a couple ways. One is internal bounties. We are you know, building an embassy for DAOs and for online creators. And so we want to put out content and build products that helps more people understand how the ecosystem is working, how to build their own DAOs, how to make the leap and how to get involved in DAOs. So we've been producing content about all those things. And then we're also starting to produce products that we both use within our DAO and that you know, also we want to share with the broader DAO community. And that, you know, is something that we compensate in Cabin tokens within the community. And then, you know, those tokens, in addition to the medium of exchange, can be used for voting on what the DAO does now and going forward.
Cool. All right. So tell me about the people. So you said you have six people that are now full-time, including yourself.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say necessarily full-time on Cabin as much as not full-time in Web2 anymore. So we, you know, we believe in multi-DAO participation. So a lot of our members, you know, I think there are two of us who are spending all of our time on Cabin DAO right now. And the others are doing bounties with Cabin and involved in our community deeply, but also involved in other wonderful DAO communities like Forefront. And you know, we think that is a healthy and smart way for people to sort of balance their participation across the ecosystem. But yeah, six people that have quit their Web2 day jobs to dive into Web3, hopefully, you know, with the ongoing support and participation in Cabin DAO. And you know, in addition to the sort of things I was describing around DAO infrastructure, I want to return to your point about the sort of online to offline or on-chain to offline component, because I think that's something we care about a lot as a DAO as well. And we've done some fun experiments there. We buried a treasure chest with an NFT wallet that is in the Texas Hill Country. It's an actual, you know, big physical wooden treasure chest with an ETH address and public and private keys stamped into a piece of metal inside of it that's buried in the Hill Country. And anybody can go add tokens or NFTs to the public address, which people regularly do. And it just continues to sort of add to the contents of the treasure chest that anyone can go find. So that's a kind of fun, like on-chain, offline experiment. We also fractionalized what I think is the first animal on-chain. It is a longhorn steer named Asterium. So we fractionalized the steer as an NFT. You know, people bought portions of it with the original intent to do a meat share program. But then the folks who bought the fractions formed the Cow DAO and decided to save Asterium from the meat grinder. And he's now living out his life on a lovely ranch about an hour away from us. So yeah, we think there's just a tremendous amount of opportunity for these sort of on-chain to offline projects. And we want to keep pushing the envelope there with real estate and with, you know, other assets that we can represent and think about at that intersection of online and offline.
Is there what's the business model? How are you trying to generate income for the individuals? I mean, right now it's basically just donation based for the hosting part of it. That's how that gets covered, but there isn't any payment necessarily to the DAO.
Yeah, exactly. So, it was not originally structured with the intention of being a money-making enterprise or a company or anything like that. It was structured with the intention of providing time and space to bring out independent online creators. I think what we've seen is that the community has now grown in a way where we're very interested in creating a sustainable and ongoing structure for the DAO and for the community. And so we're still exploring that, but I think the first and most immediate way that we're doing that is through these NFT passports. So season one was the residency program. For season two, we're going to continue running residencies, but we're also selling passports that anyone can go to creators.mirror.xyz, pick up a season two passport, and come out and spend a week with us and have the full cabin and access to all the DAO's resources. So if you're another DAO that wants to do a leadership retreat, if you are a squad that wants to work on a project together, if you're a group of people that's already building something, but you just want to get together in person for that magic and serendipity of being IRL, then you can come out and join us. And those funds go to the DAO and then help us fund more residencies. In the long run, I think, as we build out a decentralized city, what I think we will see is that, the folks in the DAO and the folks in our guild are building incredible content and products that will help the DAO ecosystem grow. And so we want to be an embassy and a home for other DAOs to come IRL, but we also want to be that online. And we think that one of the kind of key tenets of our DAO is that we really believe in paying it forward. And we think that if we bring in wonderful people and give them opportunities and build open software and products and content and opportunities for the community, that that sort of pay it forward model will work out in the long run and allow us to create sustainable programs.
There's something I asked you when we met was about how you abide by the state, like what is your connection to them, and now I'm thinking about it, like it kind of made me question, like what is a city at the end, like what is a city? So like what is a city, like, and what does a city, like how do you define your net, or like now you're a city, or like when does that happen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I've actually been reading a lot of history of cities right now and trying to understand that question, because there's actually not clear answers. There's like the very technical legal answer, which is that in the state of Texas, a group of 500 people can come together and apply to incorporate a city or a town. But I think that that's like a very niche specific part of Texas law. And the actual definition of a city is much broader and more than that. If you look at the history of cities, the original cities emerge from river valleys. And part of the reason for that was because they were very good areas for agriculture. But the other part of the reason for that was because rivers flood. And so some of the kind of earliest city-like structures came out of the need for irrigation and water management cooperatives. And so cities at their core are, in a sense, machines or structures for human coordination and collective action. I think any group of people that's coming together in a physical location to cooperate and coordinate to build structures is in a sense a city. And I think what's different now is that doesn't all have to be in one place. We can have those coordination structures operate in different nodes within a larger network of these decentralized villages that together make up a decentralized city.
Yeah, maybe you talk about that a little bit more, because that's an interesting idea too, because you don't have to be in this one location to be considered part of the city. Does that mean that each place has a different, like a set of standards that you have to follow? What does it mean to be part of this city that isn't like really in one place?
Yeah. again, these are all things that we are trying to figure out. And we'd love anyone that's listening to this is someone who we'd love to have in the community that helps us figure out what this all looks like, because no one knows yet. This is all new. But I think that, you know, when I think about what makes a city, it's really first and foremost about a culture. And when you think about, there's a great Paul Graham essay about cities and their ambitions. And he talks about how different cities have different ambitions. And when you're in that city, you can really feel that native ambition of the city. And so, you know, if you're in New York City, maybe that has to do with like finance and money. And if you're in LA, maybe that has to do with fame. And if you're in, you know, Silicon Valley, maybe that has to do with technology or power in some sense. But I think that you know, all of them have this defining cultural characteristic that is really what creates the city. And so, you know, I think decentralized cities will be the same way. The villages themselves are physical places where you can live, but the online community and the sort of cloud network will be defined by a shared culture. And I think a lot of what we're trying to do right now with the DAO is figure out what that culture looks like. And I think we're drawing heavily from the culture of, you know, other DAOs and Ethereum, and also developing our own components of the culture, like this orientation towards independent online creators and paying it forward to future generations of them.
Yeah, very interesting. So in terms of what actually happens at the location, so people are, you just invite these people out and they are spending time working on whatever projects. I assume you have some activities. I mean, what are some of the, what's the day-to-day look like?
Yeah. So we've tried to leave it very open-ended for the independent online creators as a part of season one. And we've also tried to leave it open-ended as to what this looks like in the future. You know, we want to think on very long time horizons, you know, like 100 years. And so we're not trying to put a program in place and say that that is like the version of this that will always be the case. We want to be an evolutionary and iterative structure. But for season one, we've had three cohorts of people come out to the cabins. We're in cohort three right now. And they've been an incredibly diverse group of independent online creators working on a wide range of projects, everything from you know, what you might think of as kind of typical content creators like TikTokers and YouTubers, to engineers and painters and playwrights and people working on NFT magazines and scientific publications on chain, and people working as part of other DAOs. We had a member out in the last cohort that goes by one of the many Matts on Twitter. You may be familiar with him as the guy with the NFT chip in his hand. He was out there, spent his time at the cohort fractionalizing the Doge meme with PleaserDAO and releasing the Dogecoin. So just an incredible range of projects of all different types. And we want to find a way to have the DAO be able to support people doing anything that they want to do that the DAO thinks is a cool idea and votes for.
Yeah, very cool. I got a NFT from his hand when I came to visit. He put my iPhone next to his hand over here, and there a link popped up. I thought that was pretty wild. I'd never seen anything like that before. So right now you've got two structures. Basically, you have the house, the prefab house, which you brought in from California, and you got the other structure where you're staying, which is kind of older. What other things do you envision can be on the property? Like what other things can build?
So we put in the shipping container cabin as well as a bunch of infrastructure. We have now several wells and a sort of miniature city grade septic system, an 80 foot internet tower pumping in 200 megabits a second on a fixed wireless connection. And you know, the cabins that you mentioned, I think from here, what our first and most immediate pressing need is more space for people to sleep and live. You know, particularly as we grow our mission to include more creators and also DAO retreats. I think what we're seeing is that we have bigger groups that are wanting to come out that need more capacity. So we're currently looking at what, you know, what it might look like to build another few cabins. I just read Jane Jacobs's Death and Life of Great American Cities and was inspired by some of her architectural thinking around how to build cities and how to think about, you know, density and diversity in city building and structures. And so, you know, I think we'll probably lean on some of those principles from folks like her as we think about what types of structures to build next, maybe some small A-frames or, you know, other kind of high density options. And then we've started.
What were some of the ideas from that? Maybe just tell her briefly, because I don't know anything about that, obviously. So
yeah. I mean, I didn't either. I'm learning a whole lot about urban planning and city history, like I mentioned right now. That's like all I'm reading, because there's just so much to learn. But Jane Jacobs, you know, what was this figure who I don't think was fully appreciated at the time, but has really come around as a hero of urban planning in more recent times, who said that a lot of the kind of original ideas around large-scale urban planning that came from folks like Robert Moses, who built a lot of New York City, and I think Corbusier, a French guy who had a lot of ideas around early urban planning. Their ideas were around these big monumental structures and something called the Radiant City or Garden City, where you know you build like a lot of how housing projects are built, which is like these big skyscrapers and big open areas. And all that stuff looks really great in architectural models and renderings. But the reality is it doesn't meet the needs of real humans. What real humans want is density and diversity. And that means building a lot of different types of structures, building them really close together, having the ability for people to have these very interactive environments where they're going to bump into other people. You know, I think we owe a debt of gratitude to Jane Jacobs for talking about some of that stuff and for thinking about cities more through the lens of biological structures or ecosystems. But that's really just scratching the surface of some of her ideas. But I think what that means for us is being intentional about, you know, building for density, building for diversity, and thinking about, you know, how we can both be within a natural environment out in, you know, the hill country, but also make sure that we are having clear boundaries between what is urban and what is nature, and have structures through which we can host a lot of people out there and also have, you know, beautiful nature for people to be in right next to it.
Just from my curiosity, are there any examples of cities that are built with these principles or... I mean, you haven't, I don't know.
Yeah, not a lot in the United States. So I think a big part of the problem in the United States is that most of the sort of great city development happened in the context of the emergence of cars. And so we have very car-centric cities. I think Jane Jacobs would point probably to some like smaller European villages and cities as better examples of the type of thing that she, you know, would recommend. But, you know, I think anything that's been built in the last 100 or 200 years, which is essentially almost everything that we've got in America from like a real urban perspective, is built around the technology of cars and the ideas of urban planning that is at a scale that does not necessarily meet the needs of real people.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I never thought about it that way, that it's really based around the cars rather than the people. You fit them into squares so the cars can go up and down. It's pretty interesting.
Go ahead. Just on that note, you know, I think there's another great thinker, a woman named Carlota Perez, who has talked about, she has a book called Technological Revolutions and Financial Capital. And she talks about, like, I think the five technological revolutions that have happened since the Industrial Revolution and the S curves that sort of describe them, and it draws patterns across them. And, you know, so it's things like the original Industrial Revolution, the age of electricity, the age of automobiles, you know, and now the age of computers and the internet. And what's most interesting to me about what she talks about is that this S curve has, you know, the kind of initial eruption of the new technology, but then eventually you reach this deployment phase where the technology becomes infrastructure and starts impacting the more fundamental components of, you know, day-to-day human life. And so if you look at, you know, the growth of the United States in the last 100 years, it's pretty easy to map a lot of that back to oil and automobiles. And I think we are just now reaching the deployment phase, that sort of, excuse me, broader infrastructure phase of the internet, where we're starting to see the impact of the internet on these more fundamental pieces of human life, like how we live and how we work. And those are the sort of trends that I think get us really excited.
Reminds me of this Mark Andreessen quote that I keep so relevant. He said, first the internet will permeate and then it will set the culture. So it's exactly what you're saying in that way. Very interesting. So in your city, you're not going to have streets, no cars. What's the,
yeah, you know, I think probably no cars. It should all be walkable. I mean, you walked around the whole place. It's, you know, I think people are actually pretty comfortable and interested in a 15 minute or less walk. And you can get around our entire place like that on walking trails. And we've actually been spending a lot of time carving out what some of those new trails all over the place will look like since you were out there, which has been a really fun project. And, you know, if you think about like a college campus, right, that is actually a pretty ideal setting for people to live in from the perspective of the ability to live near other people and have a walkable environment, you know, and have nice pockets of space to spend time in. I went to a small liberal arts school of about 2,000 people. You could walk around the whole campus in 15 minutes. And it's like kind of astounding when you step back and think about the fact that, like, so many people have that experience for 4 years or something like that, maybe in college. But then we end up in these urban areas or in suburban areas that are completely different from that. And we wonder why, you know, we feel less connected and less happy in some ways than we did when we were in these highly human scaled, walkable, you know, natural environments surrounded by other interesting people.
Man, you just want me to, I want to move now. I want to live like, that sounds like great. It really makes sense. Like, I never really thought about that, but when you put it in that way, like, yeah, that sounds like what I want. Like, why do you have to live in like these buildings that can't really, you're not really next to anything. And even if you are next to anything, it's just a whole bunch of roads. Like, I like that.
Cool. Well, we'd love to either have you out, you know, to live in our little village or help you start your own. And that goes, of course, for you, Gabriel, but also for anyone else listening. I think part of the reality of the decentralized nature of these cities is that, you know, CabinDAO is not going to start all of them. I'm on a Telegram thread right now with a group of people, just hopped off Twitter and onto Telegram to start planning, you know, their own compound in Lisbon. And, you know, I talk to people every week from all over the country and the world that want to get projects like this started. And I think we at CabinDAO are interested in helping folks do that.
Wow, that's really cool. I probably won't be starting one. Seems like a big undertaking, and props to you for doing it, but I'm probably, I'm staying out. But it's a really big opportunity. And I don't think that people think about actually designing their community. And like people design a house, you know, they build a house, they build their dream house. Nobody thinks like, I'm going to build my dream community. That's like a whole nother level. And I think it's really cool.
I appreciate it.
So if you were to put up a big sign in the entrance of the Cabin Dao, big billboard, what would it say?
Oh man. I mean, I think the only way to do it properly would be to put it up to a governance vote of the DAO. And that's probably what we do. But if I had to guess what the DAO might choose, you know, the best thing that comes to mind is pay it forward, which I think has been a real organizing principle and rallying cry of the DAO so far.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. What are some of the ways that you think that the DAO has accomplished that so far?
I think the biggest one is the residency program, which was really the original impetus for why we all came together. A lot of the folks who contributed to the residency program crowdfund were people who are maybe independent online creators themselves, or who have some interest in the idea of online to offline communities and in bringing together groups of independent online creators. And, you know, I think that having a space where we've been able to do that for other people is something that's been really exciting for folks to see actually come to fruition, and something that you know, we now have members from the previous cohorts who are joining the DAO and coming back and contributing to the DAO and helping out future cohorts. And so I think, you know, it takes some time to really get this kind of flywheel going. But I think we're already seeing the early signs that, you know, members of this community are getting so much out of being a part of supporting others in bringing them into independent online work, into Web3, and into the community.
Awesome. So what's the best way for someone to get involved?
Yeah. So I'd say the first thing to do is hop in our Discord and say hello. So you can go, you can check us out on Twitter at Creator Cabins. There's a link to the Discord. Hop in, introduce yourself. There's a welcome guide there that will walk you through how to get more involved. If you're interested in purchasing some cabin tokens, there's links to the Uniswap pool where you can do that. If you're interested in earning bounties and, you know, joining the guild, there's links to help you get started there. And it's a very welcoming community. You know, it's a lot of folks who, like I mentioned, have taken this leap themselves and want to help other people do it. And so if you're thinking, yeah, you know, I'm ready to start thinking about quitting my day job and working in the world of DAOs or independently online full-time, we'd love to help you out.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, Jonathan, thank you very much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I'm genuinely looking forward to what you're going to be building and creating. It's already very cool. It's already amazing. But it's going to be better. It's going to be cooler. And thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it as well. And anyone listening here is somebody who is part of the community that we'd love to have, you know, out at the cabins. And we'd love to support you any way you can. So please reach out and say hello.